I'd just like to explain that Annie is one of our counsellors, and some of you will know about that service, some of you may even have used the service, but we're absolutely delighted that Annie agreed to come and talk to us about well-being and keeping ourselves well, in the truest sense of the word. And also, I'm sure she can touch on a little bit about her experience as a counsellor for people with low vision, because I think you are our movers and shakers, and I think you knowing how valuable a counselling session, maybe even one, just one counselling session, can be to help people come to terms with such a life-changing condition. So, Annie, over to you. And feel free to speak for as long as you like, and then I know that there will be some questions for you at the end.
Absolutely. Judy, thank you so much. And thank you all for coming today. I feel really privileged to be speaking with our group today, so thank you for inviting me. I'm a counsellor. I'm based in Mid-Devon, and I work from home. I've got a small private practice at the end, well, actually quite a big private practice during the last few years, during COVID, and I have also worked in the cancer arena for a very long time as a nurse specialist. Initially, I was a Macmillan nurse in gynae oncology for a number of years, and have worked and led many a number of NHS women's health services in London and in the southwest. During as a counsellor over the last 3 years, I would say, and a lot of my colleagues would agree to this, is that our practice has really changed in how we deliver services because of COVID. And I've been working as a counsellor full-time now for about 7 years, and it's my second career. And I really love the work that I do. And as Judy said, that sometimes, you know, when we go to see a counsellor, we might be feeling a bit down or something big has happened. And some people come to therapy because they actually just want to make sense of stuff that may have happened earlier in their lives, in their childhood or in their early adulthood, or they have had a health issue, like with some of the clients I've been working with Devon Insight, all through lockdown. Everybody's issues have been really different, very unique experience to each individual going through changes and transitions. So in our work today, I thought I was kind of exploring what I thought may be helpful to you. And prior to lockdown, I did some advanced training with the RNIB through Devon Insight. And I learned a lot, actually, about communicating and supporting clients with sight impediments. And it's been a real privilege to work with those clients, and everybody's been very different. But some of the main issues that I've been working with through lockdown, actually, has everybody's situation is very different, and whatever we're going through in life, whether it's a change related to health, we go through a period of shock, anger, denial, bargaining, sometimes a little bit of depression as we process stuff. And also we then come through a period of recalibrating, refocusing and realigning. And I don't use the word acceptance anymore, actually, because I think in my clinical practice I've kind of seen and worked with many clients going through many different transitions, whether it's related to health or, you know, a big life change or something that's happened in their lives. So I just call it realigning my life to live in a new way. But thematically, throughout lockdown, I've been working a lot with individuals experience anxiety and stress. And I think, you know, there's healthy stress and then there's kind of overwhelming stress, which can turn into anxiety, which can then turn into a bit of overwhelm. And if you catch it there, it's a really helpful way to have some strategies to be able to deal with that. And today I just thought we would explore maybe some of the strategies, and we'll have some questions and answers and at the end of my my talk. But the term stress was actually derived from a physicist who used to describe how heavy a load or structure could be to carry. So we feel stressed when we feel that we are unable to cope with some of the demands that life throws at us. But our perception of the stressor is important because we're all different, we're all wired differently. And what makes people stressed can vary from one person to another. And some stressors might be stuff that we have no control over, and other stress might be internal stress. So I always kind of, in my stress work world, I always go back to stress and a bit like the caveman. So I always think of the fight and flight. So when we think of a caveman coming out of his cave, or a cavewoman, but I, from my experience and my reading, it tends to be the caveman who's gone out to do most of the big hunting. So if he goes out on his own to feed his family, he goes out into a big expansive range to find something for dinner for his family. But actually, while he's out there, he, in that expansive range, up ahead of him he might see lions and tigers, and to the left of him he might see more tigers or elephants or whatever, and then behind him there might be hyenas. So his body is actually in a state of alert for most of the time. But when we're exposed to a threat, whether it's physical, like the lion or the tiger, we experience a fight and flight and freeze response where adrenaline is released into our bodies and it causes a series of physiological changes. And in some situations, this response can be out of proportion to the event and is less helpful. For example, freezing during a work meeting or in a social situation when you're out with family or in a restaurant. So it can be helpful to think of the caveman when he's out in the jungle, how he is reacting all day. So being in a place of stress for very long periods of time is not very good for our mental health actually at all. So, but we all get stressed, and thinking you're weak is another thing to get stressed about on top of everything else. So getting stressed means I'm weak. Well, it doesn't actually mean you're weak at all. It means that you're having a normal reaction to your stress response. And another thought might be that everyone else is doing much better than me, or they're coping better with their problems. But people are very good at hiding how they feel, and they may actually be really stressed on the inside, but we can't see that. And we tend to compare how we feel to how others look. And during my therapy training, one of the most profound pieces of information that I picked up was that 94% of our communication in life with other people, other humans, is actually nonverbal. So we pick up on feelings, just feeling. When you're sitting with somebody who's stressed and anxious, you can almost feel their stress. And for a lot of us, that life can be stressful, but there are often things that we can do to help us manage the situation and improve how we're feeling. So life can be stressful. So some of the physiological responses to stress can be when we hit that fight, flight and freeze response, we experience an increase in adrenaline, which causes a number of physiological responses. And for some people, this can be really unpleasant, but they're there to protect us. So just like the man out in the jungle, they're there for a protective purpose, and are signs that your body is preparing to fight or to run away or to freeze under the threat passes. But, you know, huge amount of glucose is released into the blood supply. Our heart increases. We breathe faster. We tingle or feel cold, and we have a dry mouth and a churning stomach. And I think everybody in our room today could probably connect with that. And we get very tense. And I know I get tense when I'm stressed or anxious. Probably feeling a bit tense now, actually, when I'm working with a new group. But actually, some of us can feel a bit hot. And everybody's different. And there are some little things that we can do to look after our stress response. And that is about just becoming aware of triggers, maybe, or stresses that we have that we haven't got control over, And there are some things that we can control when we're stressed, and there are things that we can't control. So it's about where we need to put our energy. And there's a whole load of lovely, sort of helpful activities that we can do. So I teach mindfulness. I run a lovely retreat. I haven't been doing it during lockdown, but at Penny Bron in Bristol, I run a two-day Living Well retreat where we work with a group of about 20 participants for 2 days, and we spend a whole morning looking at our stress response. And part of the self-care around our stress is actually learning to relax. So we can be stressed, but actually we need to find time in our day to actually try and relax a little bit as well. So I'll probably do a little bit of relaxation with us in a minute to help us. But in preparation for today's meeting, I just thought that I would talk a little bit about our emotions and some self-care strategies. And during the talk, I thought, well, actually, we could talk a little bit about emotions, but where and how we feel stress in our bodies, and just a little bit about some of the self-care that we can do to look after ourselves. So, as I've said earlier on in my talk today, we are all unique and we all react to our emotions and our stresses in different ways. And most people experience a whole range of emotions during the day as we learn to live with any life changes and stuff that happens during the course of our day or our week or our month. And the changes from day to day, hour to hour, even minute to minute. People work through their feelings in their own way and in their own time. And how we react and adjust to living with big life changes often depends on how we face other problems and crises on our lives. So many of us can be affected and have emotional responses. We're all different. So whether it depends on our age or previous experience of dealing with difficulties or disability or family stuff going on or family experiences of dealing with difficult situations. Or perhaps we all have different support systems in our lives, as well as the spiritual and the cultural beliefs that we have, which can be comforting when we're going through lots of upheaval in our lives. But learning about the emotional effects of a big life change can help us to cope, and it can also help us to understand and support others when they're going through hard times. But feelings of fear, uncertainty, anger, guilt, stress, anxiety, loneliness, isolation, certainly during lockdown for a lot of people during COVID, and depression are all part of a normal part of the change experience. But it's also normal to feel hope and to feel a sense of relief when we got through it, surprise that we've coped, acceptance that we've coped, but actually determination that we can get through it. You may feel any or all of these emotions at some time.
Oh,
God, no,
they're getting worse. The background noise is really increasing.
Is it?
I
don't know.
Somebody's got a family in the background in another room or something with children playing.
Does it feel that loud?
Yes, I can hear it too, quite loud.
Well, it's a bit better at the moment, but it had been getting much worse.
It sounds like somebody walking outside.
Does it?
Yeah, and talking loud. It's so important what you're saying, Annie. I want to be able to hear it.
Oh, I'm hearing you. I'm sitting in my kitchen at the moment, and My husband is upstairs, but he's not talking at all. He's really quiet, but that's from my background. Has anybody else got family members around in the background?
Judy, could it be the office?
It might be. I don't know if we've got anybody listening in from the office today, because I'm on my own.
No, Judy, it's Graham here, and it's not the office.
No, it's not the office.
Hey, Sue, do we have an office?
Oh, who's that? Is that Mark?
Oh.
No? Okay, let's carry on.
Hey, Sue, do we have any other messages?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you very well, Mark. You're a bit robotic.
Oh. Shall I carry on and see how we go?
Carry on, Annie. If you can raise your voice a little bit, that might help, but I don't want you to get in voice strain.
No, that's fine. Mm-hmm. So for everybody in our room today, a diagnosis related to sight impediment or sight changes raises many fears, and it can make perhaps one feel a little bit out of control and that you don't know what the future holds. And it's normal to be afraid of the unknown, but uncertainty can make us all feel angry, afraid, anxious, or a bit irritable. But actually, learning to cope with our feelings of fear and uncertainty, and certainly in therapy, I work through a lot of fears and anxieties with my clients, helping you to learn about conditions and its treatments. And some people find that looking for information and using that information to make decision helps them make their own decision, helps them to feel a bit more in control. And some people don't want to know too much, and they are comfortable just simply following the directions of their medical team. But actually, I'm very, very strong advocate of asking as many questions as you possibly can to anybody who's involved with care. And when we go through life changes, sometimes...
Hey, Sue, what
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you. There's somebody else saying, what time is it?
Hey, Sue,
it's now 10:54.
Mark, we can hear you, darling. If you can just put yourself on mute, if you can do that.
Are you there? Yep.
Yeah, carry on. Yep. Sorry, Annie.
Okay. And when we're going through a lot of life changes, it's about sort of exploring what you think. Try to think about what you can do rather than what you can't.
What time is it?
It's 10:54. It's 10:54 now. Is that okay? So counselling is a really helpful place to be able to talk through any anxieties or fears that you may be having as you kind of cope with any of the life changes. But understanding your reaction to your anxiety is really important, and talking to family members is a really, really good thing to do, or people that you know really well. And I think culturally, talking about our mental health it's a relatively new phenomenon. I work with a lot of young people, and they're very comfortable talking about their mental health, their stress, their anxiety. And for some people, it's not so easy to talk about feeling overwhelmed or feeling that they, they're not coping. And for others, coping on their own, there is support available to all of you in the room today.
Hey, Sue, where's Squeaky Crane at?
Hello? Sorry, did you ask a question?
I think that's Mark. I don't think Mark realises he's still on the call with us. I think he probably thinks he's called off, Annie, and doesn't realise he's still on the call. And unfortunately, I can't ring him to tell him that he's still on the call. But let's hope that it stops in a minute.
Okay.
I apologise on his behalf.
So, as I mentioned earlier on, 94% of our communication is non-verbal. So even if loved ones, if you're not telling, and that goes for me, it goes for everybody in the room, if we're not telling people that we're stressed, they could probably pick up the vibes anyway, that you're feeling a little bit overwhelmed or you're feeling anxious. And the challenges and changes that we experience and that you experience with your changes to your sight brings for you and your caregivers and your loved ones, really, you know, you can feel stressed and anxious. But anxiety is a very common response to any health condition, and certainly for when I was doing my training with the RNIB about with sight changes, it can cause so many changes in your life where you have to really adapt and adopt. And when you're stressed, you may feel nervous or like you can't turn off your thoughts. But symptoms of stress and anxiety include excessive worrying. I mentioned earlier on we can feel very tense. We can affect our sleep, and sleep is one of the most important determinants of health and well-being. And I work with Dr. Neil Stanley, in, who's a doctor of sleep at Surrey University. He comes to do some group work with me in Somerset sometimes. And he was saying that if we're not sleeping well, it's one of the determinants of health and well-being, so for our mental and for our physical health. So if we have disturbed sleep for two nights, then we're probably four times more likely to have an accident outside the house. But if we have a sleep disturbance for more than 2 weeks, then it's something that you really need to talk to your GP about. And I understand that for clients who have got sight impediments, that sleep can often be a big issue. But it's certainly something that I advocate, that if clients are worried or having sleep disturbance, that they speak to their doctor about it to get some help with it. And it doesn't always mean sleeping tablets. Sometimes there's a whole range of drugs out that you can use to help with comfortable sleep where you're not drowsy the next day. And in my other work that I do for women who are working through breast cancer diagnosis or going through chemotherapies, often sleep is badly disturbed, and it's something that the GPs are very good at managing and supporting. But when we're stressed or anxious, we also have a bit of restlessness sometimes because we can't sit comfortably, all the thoughts are going round in our heads, or our heart rate can go up, or we feel a bit tight in our chest. Worked with a client yesterday who has been very, very stressed, and his heart rate goes up to about 115. But when we do our relaxation together, it actually really helps him to relax. So he's practicing more and more relaxation and doing some strategies to look after his stress management at home now. But when we're stressed, we can be very tired, it's exhausting, we can have trouble concentrating, we can be irritable. I don't know about you, but when I'm stressed, I can be a bit irritable and sometimes a little bit impatient. But looking after ourselves is very important. So we all have different levels of stress, but from a sort of very low level to a high level, depending on the situation or how we perceive a situation to be. But anxiety may be highest when a person is waiting for, you know, site result, you know, when you've had some more tests done or a site review, or, you know, deterioration, or it's really stressful time for everybody. But actually, when treatment needs to be changed, or, you know, if you're not getting enough support from others, that can be also be quite stressful for everybody. But trying to figure out what makes you feel anxious, it's really helpful. Research shows that just talking to somebody about how we feel, somebody you trust, is really important. And also spending time with people who make us laugh or people who make us feel calm. And think about what's important and try to manage your time by making maybe a little list of things to do each day, maybe just creating a little bit of balance. And sometimes we become overwhelmed when we're doing too much. So sometimes we need to let things go off the list on a daily basis, or maybe do them every other day. But make sure that when you're planning your day, that you actually do something for you, something that you really, really enjoy. And in my work, even just trying a little bit of relaxation really, really helps. And I teach mindfulness. And mindfulness, a lot of people think, oh, you know, what is mindfulness? It's a really simple way of being. And the research shows that by being quiet, even for 10 minutes a day, is really good for our mental health and grounding ourselves. And I'm going to try a little relaxation just in a few minutes, if that's okay. But even just making sure that we get enough sleep, that we do a little bit of exercise, and that we eat healthily, that's also really important. And when we're stressed, cutting down on caffeine, so coffee, tea, or cola drinks, switching to decaffeinated drinks is actually really good for our stress response as well. I help clients a lot in my therapy room to look at how much caffeine they're taking, and it helps to reduce our stress levels. But also for all of us, looking at what support or resources we have available, And I know Devon Insight is always here for you, that you can always just pick up the phone and the team are available for you to talk with. So just to reassure you that we are all individuals and we all have our own way of dealing with worries and anxieties. But the most important thing to recognise is when you do feel stressed, how your body feels, and begin to take small steps just to look after yourself. And breathing is really important. It really grounds us. So I thought it might be helpful to talk about breathing actually a little bit, because we know that there's an exercise that I use in my therapy room, which is called square breathing. I don't know if anybody is familiar with the term, but it's a lovely... Yeah, is everybody familiar with that? Or
No.
No?
Anybody else heard of that before? I certainly haven't, so I'm very interested.
Okay.
No.
So I tend to work... What happens is that when we breathe mindfully, it tells the sympathetic nervous system that there's no threat. So the lion's gone away back into the woods. So it's a way of just calming the body, but also calming the mind. So I'm going to invite you all to just very gently just close your eyes. And I'm going to invite you to take even just a couple of breaths. So breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth. And breath in, and breathing out gently through the mouth, and relax the body. And just with your eyes closed and breathing normally, I'm going to invite you to just become aware of your feet firmly on the ground. And you might want to wiggle your toes around a wee bit. And as you breathe normally, just becoming aware of your knees and relaxing your knees and just becoming aware of the belly. So I'm just noticing when you breathe in, the rise of your belly, and on the out-breath, the fall of the belly. And again, breathing in, the rise of the belly, and very gently on the out-breath, the fall of the belly. And just noticing that breath as it enters and leaves your body. And paying attention to it. And now just becoming aware of your shoulders. And at the back of our shoulders we have the trapezius muscle, which is sort of tightening and relaxing all day long, but actually gets a bit tired, and that's where we feel a lot of stress. So it's just inviting your trapezius muscle to relax at the back of your shoulders, and just becoming aware of the back of your head and the top of your head and your forehead, and just becoming aware of the breath coming in through the nose into the lungs, and the rise of the belly, and the fall of the belly on the out-breath. And now, as you breathe normally, I'm just going to invite you to imagine a frame. It could be a picture frame, or it could be just a frame of a picture, perhaps, that you've seen, that you've loved in your life, or an imagined picture. Or it could be perhaps something that maybe a hillside or a sea view or something. But I want you to imagine it in a square box, in a frame. And what we're going to do now, I'm going to invite you to, looking to the bottom left of the picture, I'm going to invite you to breathe in. So big breath in to the count of four, right up to the top left of the picture. So breathing in, counting to four, and then we're going to follow the picture as we hold the breath, counting to four. We're going to follow the picture at the top as we hold the breath, and then we're going to breathe out to the right of the picture as the breath leaves the body, and then relax And again, on the left-hand side of the frame, we're going to breathe in to the count of four, going right up to the top. Hold the breath across the top of the picture. And breathing out slowly to the count of four to the right of the picture. And relax to four. And just relax the body. And again, just one more time, just to the left of the picture, breathing in for four. Holding the breath to four across the top of the picture. And breathing out slowly to the right of the picture, out through the mouth, and relax the body. And now, just coming to the end of that gentle little relaxation, I'm going to invite you to now take a couple of grounding breaths. So just breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. And breath in. And just let go again. And you might want to tap now, just tapping on the body, just any part of your body, just coming out of the head and into the body. And just very mindfully and very gently coming back into the space. And just to remind everybody that if you like relaxation, you can access them through the book service with the RNIB. You get them. You may all have access to that facility, but they do have an amazing collection at the RNIB. I called them actually a few weeks ago for one of my clients, and they very kindly said that there's a whole selection on mindfulness and relaxation available to you as part of their audiobook service and audio music service. So that has been a busman's tour, really. I'm just open for any questions, actually, from anybody in the room.
Just Annie, can I just say before we go into questions, that was really useful, really useful. I've never heard the square, and that helped me visualise it so much. That's wonderful. So thank you.
Yeah, yeah, so it's four, yeah. Four, and four, isn't it? It's just four up, four down. You know, yeah. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It stops you thinking too much about what you're actually doing, because half the time you can get so wound up about breathing in and breathing out, but picturing that picture made it so easy. That was
and
brilliant.
Counting.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. So well, have we got
when
any...
you get advice, get it from non-professionals, some people can be very sceptical and questioning things, but to hear something coming as it did today from a professional person, I think makes a lot of difference.
Well said, Les. Well said. Thank you. So are there any specific questions that we can ask Annie?
Yes. Hello, Annie. I'm Karen. Thank you so much. That was a lovely, lovely talk. I wanted to ask, did you say it was 9% or 90% that is nonverbal communication?
94.
94? God,
it is
amazing.
Isn't it? It really. When I was doing my therapy training, we talked about that, and I don't know about. There's a lovely quote from Maya Angelou, that great philosopher, who says that we don't remember what people said or what they did, but we remember how they made us feel.
Yes.
And lovely. Yes, so 94% of nonverbal. So even when we're sitting next to somebody, we're picking up a lot of their energy from their body and how they're feeling.
Oh, I just spontaneously, I remember Maya Angelou on a talk with Oprah Winfrey, and there were question and answers, and a young black girl who was about 17, I guess, asked a question of Maya Angelou and said, "What is your inspiration?" And Maya Angelou stood up and went down into the audience and took the young girl's face in her hands so tenderly and said, you are my own inspiration. I always remember that. I watched it with my daughter and it made us cry. So just sharing that story.
Oh, amazing human being is my, you know, amazing woman.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, no, I think that's a bit of a wake-up call for me, I think, actually, thinking about how many times we forget that the people we're working with can't see those hidden signals. And it means that the language we use has to be really, really spot on, doesn't it?
Can I ask a quick question?
Oh, do, Les. Go ahead.
I'm taking up both of your points, Karen, and your own, the point you just made. Many, 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 many years ago, for my sins, I started to read a few books about Gestalt therapy by a guy called Friedrich Perls. And one of the things that he emphasized, and I'm talking years ago because I'm 70 now, was the importance of the voice, content of the voice, the tone, where you're not able, as I've discovered on the journey through blindness, to develop coping strategies. I found because I was losing the subtle signals that somebody gave in their face, their lips, the smile, their body gesture, the posture, that I started to concentrate more and more on the tone of their voice and how they actually expressed themselves. And it turned out that sometimes, even if you were sighted, I suspect if you closed your eyes and actually listened to the way somebody spoke and what they were saying, you can actually pick up a wealth of information, and it can act as a substitute to a certain degree for your being able to understand people.
Gosh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful, Les, because I agree. In the last, you know, I've had this all my life anyway, that I sometimes, if someone's on the phone, a friend, I'll say, are you having a hard time? Because I can hear it in their voice.
Oh,
there's a tension or something in their voice. There's so much that we can pick up, isn't there, from the voice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know that animals definitely pick up voices and how people are feeling.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true. Mm-hmm. Are there any more? That was a great question, Les. Are there any more questions?
Yes, please. It's Christine.
Christine. Yeah.
Yes. Annie, as a care, I'm visually impaired and I'm a carer for another member of the family. And one of the problems is the sleep, and you talked about lack of sleep. And have you got any practical advice? Because quite often you need to be awake for part of the night to give medication, or the other person is very troubled in their sleep, so you can't sleep either. Do you have any suggestions? I suspect cat napping might appear somewhere, but I'd just like to ask your advice.
Yes, there's actually some new research out which shows that napping in the day, it used to be frowned upon, but actually it's a really good thing to do. But for you, actually, Christine, that must be really hard, having a, you know, disturbed night. You're just thinking of, and is it with your in your world at the moment? I use the word world in my therapy world. In your life at the moment, is each night different, or is there sort of a structure to the awakeness, if you like?
The awakeness often happens sort of between 1:30 and 2:30.
Oh, okay.
And then sometimes after that, it continues to be quite a troubled sort of wakeful night.
Okay.
But there's also quite a bit of variety as well, I suppose, Annie.
Okay, but with in the world of sleep, there's a lot of talk about sleep hygiene, and sleep hygiene is about, but when we go to sleep, what actually happens is most of us will be asleep by 11 p.m. at night. So when we go to sleep, every hour to hour and a half, we have what's called an REM dip, rapid eye movement dip.
Right. Yeah.
And when the rapid eye movement dip dips, it lasts for about 6 minutes, so we kind of go in, your body goes into a coma state, really, into a very deep sleep. So rapid eye movement sleep is a really good sleep, where we go to sleep very deeply. But during that period of time, we produce quite a lot of melatonin, and melatonin boosts our immunity, it calms our brain down, it heals connective tissue, and it helps to calm the brain down of any difficulties that the brain's had the night before. And then we have a few minutes of dreams, and we don't always remember those dreams, but we do dream. And then we have rapid eye movement, which helps the body to process stuff that's happened in the mind and the body the day before. So that happens every hour and a half during sleep. And then when the sun comes up in the morning normally, we then stop producing melatonin, and then we produce serotonin, which is our happy hormone. Mm. And with serotonin, it used to be thought that it was all produced in the pituitary gland, but actually about 10% is stimulated from that tiny gland in the middle of our brains. And 90% of serotonin now is produced in our gut. Now, that it's a whole new leg of medicine that's actually evolving. So when we have disturbed sleep, it affects the circadian rhythms, and it affects the level of melatonin that we actually have in our body when we make up. So for you, waking up between 1 and 2 in the morning every day, it means that you will have lost out on one circadian rhythm. Mm. So to catch up on your circadian rhythms, what would be helpful for you to do is that if you have got, like even in our bedrooms, regardless of what your sight situation is that having like a blackout room or an eye mask actually helps us in the production of melatonin. It helps us to go back into a little, another little sleep dip, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. So sleep hygiene is really important. So things like lavender oil is really lovely little remedy that we can use. Pure essential oil, like a little spritz of that on our pillow, helps us to relax the body. Not having caffeine. So a lot of the experts now say that we shouldn't really drink caffeine after 1 p.m. in the afternoon, because it's, number one, it's a bladder irritant, so it has us up peeing in the middle of the night. And number two, it actually can affect sleep. But healthy sleep is really important for our mental health. And the top tips are a little bit of exercise during the day is good to help us to sleep well. Reducing alcohol consumption is really important. Cutting down, as I've said, on caffeine in the afternoon and the evening time. Eating dinner late is also thought to affect, because the body has to work a little bit harder when we're asleep to digest our food, or if we've had a heavy meal. So eating earlier is better than eating later. But actually also restricting our activities when we're in bed. So to kind of reassure the mind that being in bed, and the bedroom is for sleep only, so having a calm bedroom with they reckon the temperature should be about 19 degrees for that, but also having a comfortable mattress, you know, just keeping the noise down, and having, you know, a bit of lavender oil on the side if you can. But it feels to me like the flow of your night, if you have got to get up every morning for medication, Christine, that's become part of your norm.
Yes. So
can I make a quick point about blue light? One of the things that I've started to realise, or I may be completely fantasising about this, but one of the things that's becoming prevalent now and people should perhaps look at is the effect of blue light. So get rid of that mobile phone out of the bedroom. Get rid of any pads, iPads,
extension
that put
leaves,
blue light out.
Light.
Apparently, I may be wrong, so I'm asking, it tricks the visual cortex, blue light, into thinking that it's daytime all the time.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Les. You're absolutely on it. And there's an amazing doctor called Dr. McCullough. And even for certainly with young people that I work with now who are just on tablets and phones morning, noon and night, is they have some anti-blue light specs that they wear. They can get them cheaply on Amazon, or you to have blue light settings on your iPads or smartphones or laptops or whatever, so that you're not being exposed to that from about 9 o'clock. So Dr. Stanley is always telling in our group, he always says you need to have 90 minutes to get ready to go to sleep. So an hour and a half of no blue light, preferably, before you even go to sleep.
Thank you.
Oh, I'd love to know how many people achieve that.
Yeah.
I'm guilty. I don't. Not 90 minutes. My goodness.
Yeah,
so perhaps I need to go back to reading.
Annie, could I ask about the freeze, fight or flight? Because about just a month ago, I brought it to the group, actually, that I'd had this problem with the social services, the Care Direct sensory team service. And, you know, when you're registered severely sighted, the government gives £1,000 for each person. And I'd taken it that, oh, I could apply for, you know, to get help to buy certain things. And anyway, there was... They came back and said, no, you can't do this and you can't do that. And I'd actually had to step back. I went to sleep that night, or tried to, and my chest was gripping, my stomach was gripping, and I had to get up and have hot milk, you know, and a cigarette, actually. And then the next day I actually sent them... a telephone message saying, you know, I'm going to step back for a while. I need 3 weeks off. And it was in our group, our chit-chat group, Les said that he knew the lady, the manager, who I'd been talking to, this lady, Alison. Yeah, which immediately softened my, for some reason, my feeling towards the group. And then I sent another telephone message to them saying, you know, that I really appreciated their work, and but I still felt that I just needed to have time away from... They wanted to come and visit me, and I said, no, I couldn't, I can't, you know, handle a visit. So it was just to do... It was somehow this system, and I was very small, you know, in comparison to it, and so I was flight, you know, I chose flight, and I have thought when I go back, I'll have a caseworker. I'll wait to get an RNIB caseworker, which is, I'm in the process. You have to wait about 6 or 7 weeks, and then we can go back, and I'll have that support. So I would appreciate... One thing was that our chit-chat group feels like, to me sometimes, that everybody in it is a counsellor. And, you know, I get so much help from people in our chit-chat group here, you know. But at the same time, I'm very interested in this freeze, fight and flight. And could you speak a little bit about that, please,
Annie?
Yeah,
absolutely. And just to say as well that... when we go into the fight, flight and freeze response, it's kind of in our DNA. So sometimes with stress and anxiety, some of us are born in our DNA, we have a predisposition to being anxious. But for all of us with the fight, flight and freeze, what happens is something that we hear or something somebody's done, or if our body is feeling overwhelmed, a message will go through, a signal will go through to our brain, to our hippocampus, to say, there's danger here, there's a lion about to approach you. Our thoughts can do that to us. So it might be something, we're all triggered in different ways. So with the fight, flight and freeze response, what happens is, a trigger will go through into the hippocampus. The hippocampus will send a little trigger to the adrenal glands in our kidneys to say, there's danger here, you know, you're in danger, you need to send, you know, send the troops. So what actually happens is that a lot of cortisol will be secreted by the adrenals. And did you know, and I didn't know this actually until I did my nurse training, but the adrenals also control blood pressure. But they also supply us with lots of stress hormones like cortisol. And then cortisol will be secreted, and adrenaline and noradrenaline will be secreted. And our body will then be ready for a fight, really, to kill the lion right in front of us. And then once the threat has gone, It takes the body about 40 minutes just to calm down after the threat has gone away. So it might be you're in a meeting and somebody triggers you for whatever reason. It might make you feel anxious or stressed, or it might be how they said something or the content of what they were saying. And we will go into the stress response, or it might be a family member that's upset you or a friend or whatever. But we all get triggered in different ways. It might be that you've boiled the milk over if you're making a milky coffee or something. That really stresses me out, actually. But I go into the stress response because then I have to, you know, rescue the milk. But it takes my body about 40 minutes and your body 40 minutes just to calm down and to go back into what we call a resourced state. And by the 4-4-4 breathing I've talked about today, as soon as we feel ourselves being triggered, if we're in meetings or we're in a situation, I usually encourage my clients, you know, some people have a panic attack, but actually the 4-4-4 breathing technique will actually help to tell your brain that to calm down, it's okay, you know, the threat's gone. So breathing actually really helps to reduce that stress response. And Christine, it feels to me you've done the right things, that you've just needed some time, some space to step away from those triggers, we call them triggers, to have strategies to go back into that, into the lion's den, as it were, with a bit of support. And it sounds to me you've managed it very well for you.
Oh, it's Karen.
Karen,
oh, did you say Christine? Yes, thank you.
Sorry, I beg your pardon, Karen.
That
so it feels to me you've handled that very well.
Yes, but I think also it was the chit chat group that helped me to, you know, sort of calm down a bit. I think this went on for a few days, you know. And listening to other people sometimes talk about their trouble with you know, the pips or other, it's systems sometimes. When you're a person alone facing a system, that can sometimes be quite overwhelming. You know.
I'm really hearing you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, you found, what I'm hearing as well is that just by being with other people who are walking the walk and can talk the talk with you, it's reaffirming and reassuring.
Oh, so helpful. Yes, thank you.
That you're feeling what you're feeling, and you're validated. So your feeling and your anxieties are also being validated by the group. And yeah, I'm absolutely hearing you. And it sounds that group is really important for you.
Yeah.
That was wonderful. I'm just glancing at the time, everybody. We could perhaps squeeze one last question if anybody has something they feel they want to ask right this minute. Go ahead.
Judy, can I just squeeze in? It's Christine. My grateful
fact, please do.
About all the sleep suggestions. Thank you. I actually feel as though there are things that you've also validated, and it's also given me some ideas of things that I can try. So I very much appreciate that.
Can I just quickly say with sleep, the content in milk is called tryptophan, it's a lovely an amino acid that helps us to... That's a precursor to the hormone melatonin, which helps us to regulate our sleep. But it's also contained in other drinks like cherry juice, chamomile tea, and valerian tea, peppermint tea, and warm milk.
Oh, warm milk.
Almond milk or cow's milk is fine. And banana almond smoothie is very good for sleep as well.
That's a good tip. I'm beginning to wonder whether we should do a fact sheet about, you know, top tips to get a good night's sleep, because I don't think it's just you, Christine. I think you asking that question has actually helped a lot of people. It's certainly given me food for thought.
Yeah.
We might come back to you, Annie, if we start something just for you to validate that for us. That would be really helpful.
Oh, do you know, I would be very happy even further down the line to do. I'm passionate about sleep because it's such a determinant of physical and mental health. So I'm
maybe that's a whole session then, perhaps, just focusing on sleep.
Could happily listen for another hour, Annie. I think this is one of the best talks I've listen to, but you know, on the sessions.
Yeah. Good to hear.
Thank you.
Yeah. There we are, Annie. You're our star, our homegrown star. So that's fantastic.
Thank you so much
for your time, Annie. You can hear the difference you've made. And I think we will definitely get together and talk about a session on sleep, perhaps next year, sometime early next year, because our speaker program is quite full, which just indicates how important you all are to other people. Lovely. They need to get their message across to you.
Thank you so much.
And just to remind everybody, we have our Wednesday call tomorrow, so I'm sure I'll be speaking to some of you then as well.
Okay. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye. Take care, Annie.
Thank you again.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye, Karen. Bye-bye. Bye.